Prudent Money with Bob Brooks is sponsored by the Prudent Money Foundation on 91.3.
Well, what are some creative ways to pay for college? Today we're going to take a look. Stay tuned for Prudent Money. Good afternoon and welcome to the Prudent Money Radio Show. I'm your host, Bob Brooks. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. Well, with college costs outrageously high, parents and students alike have to get creative. Today, college admissions expert and Prudent Money contributor John Apollo is here to share some insight. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Bob, great to be with you this afternoon.
Now, we've talked about this a lot, and I think out of some of the major points that you make and have made through the years on the program, I think this is probably one of the most important ones, and that you can't just kind of go into the college process. You got to have a game plan and make sure that you have a multi-dimensional plan to pay for it.
Yeah, Bob, I think that's exactly right, and I'm glad that's the message that has come out from our conversation, because that's what I talk about all the time. This idea that anybody can wake up a junior year or senior year in high school and say, okay, I'm going to now get this together and figure this out in the next month or two or 12 months, they find themselves, and it happens across everybody I talk to. It's just like universal. All of a sudden, they're the ones who are the deer in the headlights. Those are the folks who start scrambling around. And you and I know that when you're in that situation, you're kind of reacting. What happens then is you start making some decisions that you look back on later and saying, oh, geez, if only I had known, or if I had thought about this a little longer, I would have made some different choices. So I think the idea of starting as early as you can, and, we talked in early, it means, literally a time child is born to start saving. But like when we're talking about planning for college, the nuts and the bolts of it, starting early freshman year in high school is not too early. And then every year after that, spending a little bit of more time just saying, where are we? Where is my student? How are they changing during the course of their high school experience? What kind of school do we think we're trying to solve for at the end of the day? Is it a local school? Is it far away? Is it urban? Is it rural? All those things that we go through and the students go through. And just having a little bit of a plan, it makes all the difference in the world.
I got to tell you, it's funny because I was just thinking back. You and I have been doing this segment on a monthly basis for a long time. And I was just thinking back to my oldest son's freshman year in high school. And you're telling me all these things I got to be doing that I should be doing and I wasn't doing. And then, of course, I've gotten quite the education over the process over the years. And even today, as prepared as I think that we are, I got to tell you, him being a senior, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, you know what? And so I started Invite Education at mycollegecorner.com after I went through the exact experience you did, Bob. I was in the world of helping people plan and pay for college my entire career prior to my daughter's going into the process. So I spent time as an investment banker understanding student loans and private credit student loans, and I was the chief financial officer of a publicly traded company that dealt with this very topic. And kind of like you, there I was junior year, and I looked around and said, well, wait a minute, if I'm confused by this, I'm staring like a deer in the headlights. What is everybody else doing? And I started talking to my friends on the soccer fields and the cocktail parties and realized that there's so much bad information out there and people get all emotionally wrapped up into this thing. It's what drove me to start this business and start conversations with folks like you and say, look, there really is a better way. And us sharing our experience, and it's true, we've been really honest on this show about the good, the bad, and the ugly of all of this. Hopefully your listeners will say, you know what? If I start thinking about this a little sooner, I might have a really good outcome for my family. So I'm so thrilled that you took this on and have stayed the course here and provide your listeners this opportunity. It's just fantastic.
Well, and I appreciate you spending the time, because it is a commitment to come on the program and get ready for it and all that good stuff. Let's talk a little bit about the financial component of it, which is a big deal. And you know, one of the things that we've talked about is to have that you pay for college with a lot of different types of resources. So let's go through that list. And, you know, first of all, there is what perhaps you pay up front, and then what you can pay monthly. Talk about the pros and cons of setting up a payment plan.
Yeah, so what you're saying, Bob, I think is one of the hidden gems. And in fact, at mycollegecorner.com, we put up a blog post there that I called Tuition Payment Plans, Hidden Gems, because I really do think they're hidden gems. So here's the premise. You know, you have a student who's going to go off to college on, let's just call it September 1st. That means starting September 1st, they're not eating with you. They're not sucking the gas out of your car. They're not hitting you up for spending money on the side and all the things. And so what I found, and I think most people find, is that we actually have a little more disposable income. So we're spending less, so we have a little bit more. And what I tell folks is that what you can do with that money is pretty extraordinary. And one of the opportunities is when the bill comes, there'll be something in there, a flyer or brochure that says, you know what, if you want to enter into this tuition payment plan for a fee, and the fee is usually something in the order of, you know, $50 or $75, we'll allow you to pay over a number of months. And usually most of the plans are set up, so it's 5 months or 10 months. So let's just assume that, you know, you're going to have $100 more each month because your student's not living with you anymore. So over that 10 months, that's $1,000. And, you know, that's real money. And it's real money when you think about what the alternative might be. So if I didn't use that payment plan, some families might say, I'll just increase the student loan by $1,000. And so you and I know that when I take out a loan, I have to pay interest on it. The actual total cost of that extra $1,000 borrowing is probably somewhere close to $2,500 over the life of that loan. You know, the rough metric's about 2.5 times what you borrow over a 10-year period. So just think about that. You know, if I'm able to use my current income, $100 a month for 10 months, I paid $1,000. I probably didn't miss that money in my current lifestyle. It didn't change me at all. And I just saved my student or myself the cost of $2,500 over the next coming period. So I do think that those payment plans are hidden gems. And the great thing about them are that you can use it for all the tuition or part of the tuition. And I think if you use it for part of the tuition as a part of a broader package, you might find that works really well to keep down your total cost of school.
You know, and that really dovetails into something that I talk about all the time, John, which is the importance of having a very detailed spending plan, not so much a budget, but a spending plan, so you know where every dollar is going, because you need to know that detail so that you can really dive in and see, okay, you know, because my child is not in my home, I'm saving, you know, X amount of dollars, and you don't know that unless you are intimate with the details.
No, that's absolutely right. And, I may have been a little extreme in this, but my money when I was a student was so tight that I literally would come home and write in a book where I spent the money. You know, that's I'm reading a spreadsheet, but I don't want to sort of get into the time period of that. But literally, I knew that, okay, you know, I'd spent, you know, $5 on this and $500 on that or whatever it was over the course of time. And then when I had to turn a lever here or there, you know, there were some times when I just said, you know what, I can't go out tonight, or I had to do something different. But I think you're right. Knowing the spending details and then knowing where you can reallocate some of those dollars when it gets a little tough is a huge part of being really a responsible borrower in some ways, but really showing that you're financially literate and it's important to you and you can make good choices.
Now, back when you were in college, it's about probably the same time I was in college, and we didn't have to write things down, John, because we could get that free credit card. Yeah, but that was do you remember that? That the credit boom was happening with credit cards, and I'll never forget all the credit cards that I took out in college.
Yeah, and you know, luckily, I'm usually not a big proponent of the federal government stepping in to protect people from that sort of activity, but they did.
Yes,
because there's a lot of abuse on those campuses, right? You know, here, come get a free T-shirt and get it. You know, take this credit card, and then you know, you found these students were maxing out $500,000, $1,500 credit cards, paying 18% to 20% on that, and getting themselves in real trouble. So I'm real glad that those days are for the most part behind us.
Yes, yes. The second component of this could be that you've put money aside in a 529 plan. And since we're talking about different components of an overall plan, you know, John, if you haven't started putting money back into something like a 529 plan as your child's a freshman, you still have 4 years to accumulate some investment dollars that you can use. Talk about the ins and outs of that plan.
Yeah, Bob, I've been a big proponent of the 529 plans for this reason. That whatever you put into that plan earns, accumulates, grows tax-free from the minute you put the money in. And as long as you use the withdrawal for what technically is known as a qualified educational expense, which sort of in translation in English, it means just about anything related to going to college. You can use it for tuition, room, board, fees, computers, housing, you know, whatever it might be. The idea is to use that money for a college expense. And the prospect of having that grow tax-free, and your point, I think, is a great one. Even if you're a freshman or a sophomore, even a junior in high school, saving, we have a phrase at my college corner, we say, saving a dollar today is better than borrowing one tomorrow, for the reasons we talked about, you know, before.
Yeah, good point.
Better off, like, saving. You know, but let me tell you what they've done, because it's not just now about savings. The Congress back in December, as part of that big, huge, mammoth year-end spending bill, passed some provisions to expand 529 withdrawals. So now qualified expenses include paying down student loans. It includes apprenticeships and also spending for K-12. The K-12 provision's been there for a little bit, but these two new ones, student loans and apprenticeships, are really, really important, because one of the problems, I think, with the 529 accounts before was that people felt, well, you know what, if my kid doesn't go to college, I'm going to somehow lose that money. That actually wasn't true. There are some provisions there. You get that money back. But there was that thought that, what if they want to become a welder, or what if they want to do something else and they're not, you know, really in line to be a college student? So now if they go to qualified apprenticeships programs, you can use that money for those apprenticeship programs. And then the icing on the cake, I think, in a lot of ways is around, you know, use of student loans. And I think you asked me last time, well, you know, that sounds, you know, a little, you know, spurious. Who's like saving enough in their 529? Wouldn't you just apply that for the savings? Just pay it out and not take the loan. And I think what we're seeing, and sort of anecdotally, and as I talk to folks about this, it gives families an opportunity to say, you know what, if I have some of that disposable income and I'm not sure what to do with it, if I continue to contribute to the 529 program, and my student has to take some loans later on in school, maybe I can reduce the amount of that loan. Or, on the other side of that, if I contribute to it while they're already in college,
yeah,
and they
point.
Take a loan freshman year or sophomore year, hey, then I can go and pay off that loan. So I think the way this is evolving is really favorable for families.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. John Apollo is my guest. And we're talking about putting a spending plan together to pay for college. If you want more information on John, great website is mycollegecorner.com. And he has got a ton of free information on that site. It's, I think, the finest college resource out there. Let's talk a little bit about one of the things, and you already mentioned the question, what do I, you know, it's kind of the panic question. What do I do if my kid doesn't use the 529, but we don't use it for college? Well, you know, one of the neat ideas, John, and I want you to speak to this, is that the flexibility of changing the child on the plan, you could always save that, keep that money invested and give it to a grandchild.
That's exactly right, Bob. Right from the beginning of the 529 programs, one of the big features there was the idea that you could change the beneficiary. So literally, you know, parents will say, well, you know, I don't need to start saving yet because I don't have any kids. And I say, well, if you have some money and you're thinking about having children, if you start a 529, you can start it for yourself. You know, you can open that account today, start getting in that disciplined habit of savings, let the compounding work for you over a long period of time. And then, as you're saying, if whatever happens, you have one child or two children, three, whatever your circumstance might be, if there's money left over, you can change the beneficiary. If one of those students don't go, you can change the beneficiary. I can always take the money back, change it back to my name, save it for a grandchild. There's an awful lot of flexibility. And then there's, you know, this is not what the Congress called it, but I'll call it the kind of bailout provision. You know, if all else fails, and let's say you come on tough times, you have a health issue or something happens, you just need to get to that cash, you can get to the cash. And the way they built the program, they'll say if you take it out for a non-qualified educational expense, so you just want to get the money back, then you have to pay the tax on the earnings, and also pay a 10% penalty. And that sounds kind of daunting to me. It turned out that in my younger daughter's account, we had some money left over there. So I called the provider one day and said, gee, I have no idea how to go about figuring what this amount is. I said, oh, no trouble. I'll call you tomorrow and I'll tell you what that amount is. So the systems are set up where the providers now can say, if you want to take that money out just as a non-qualified expense, here's how much you'll get. So if you have, you know, $10,000 in there, you know, maybe you'll get $7,000 or whatever it might be back. So there are systems in place for families to know with certainty just by calling up the plan provider and saying, if I made a non-qualified withdrawal, how much would I get back? So the mystery is really kind of out of that. And it's a matter now of parents just knowing that they have lots of options. They can change the beneficiary, or if they really need the cash, they can pay the penalty and get some of that money back. In fact, a good portion of that money back.
Yeah, and you make a good point. There are a lot of options and a ton of flexibility with these plans. Let's talk a little bit about grants and how they work. How would something like that fit into the spending plan?
Yeah, so, you know, we're really talking about, in a lot of ways, what I like to call, and we call this in our book, Plan and Finance Your Family's College Dreams, we talk about it as free money. Right, so free money, you know, current income, I have it, I can invest that to pay down the college bill. The savings, again, it's not costing me anything, I've used that. And now we're talking about money from somebody else. And the rest of the sort of free money can come either from gifts, maybe from grandparents or from aunts or uncles or friends, whoever it might be, or it might come from grants or a scholarship. And there are two primary ways for families to get grants and scholarships. One is through the federal process, and we've talked before about the FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid. It comes out on October 1. Seniors, anybody who's listening now who has a senior in high school, I'm sure has been through this process already, hopefully, because it's now getting kind of late. But starting October 1, you file that form, and that makes you automatically eligible for whatever financial aid you could qualify for. So the government does a calculation and they say, okay, based on your income predominantly, mostly your income, you know, here's your expected family contribution. And then once that is calculated, the schools that you apply to take that number and they take the formula and they say, okay, here's our cost. Here's what the government says that you should be contributing. Here's our financial aid package to meet the rest of that. And in that financial aid package, there'll be grants and scholarships, hopefully. The great news about the grants and the scholarship is that it doesn't need to be repaid. It doesn't need to be earned. Like a work study award would be in a financial aid package, but I have to go actually as a student and work to get that money. This is just money that's provided sort of with no strings attached. One caveat on all this, whenever we're talking about grants and scholarships, it's just really critical that families know the details. And specifically, is this a one-year grant? Is this for all 4 years? Are there eligibility requirements for second, third, and fourth year? And really just sort of understand that, because sometimes you hear of colleges that will say, oh, I want to get this student in here, so we'll give them this one-year grant of $15,000, and then they'll be silent about whether or not they're going to renew that, and sometimes they might not renew that. So understanding this, the details of these grants and scholarships, really critical.
One last question, John. The there's and someone posed this question to me that they have that he's a grandfather and he wants to make contributions to his grandkids' college, and he said, isn't there an easy way to set up a 529 plan where people can just contribute into it? But I don't think that's the case, is it?
Well, they can set up 529 and then have that withdrawal go to the student. But this is a very technical argument, Bob, and maybe we can address that separately. But the bottom line on it is that if a grandparent makes a withdrawal out of an account and gives that money to a student, that becomes income for the student. And for the financial aid calculation, they assume that about half of that is eligible for reduction in financial aid. So that becomes a penalty. So the way to get around that, frankly, is because of the nuance of the way the financial aid formula works. If a grandparent does that after like the sophomore year, the college student's sophomore year, the way the rules are written, they're not looking back into that tax year where it becomes a problem. So you can make that contribution and not penalize the student. Or the other way to make a contribution to a student is to just make a gift to the student, to the parent, and have it go into the student's 529 account or the parent's 529 account that's supporting that student. So there are lots of ways to do that. One thing that we talked about a while ago, we haven't touched on it recently, is that there are now gift cards out there where I can go on just about any 529 plan and make a gift into that plan for a particular student. So there are definitely ways to do it. Just want to be careful of the nuance of that.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. John Apollo has been my guest. If you want to get more great information, mycollegecorner.com is his website. And like I said, it's packed full of free information and very thorough information that you really do need for successfully navigating through college. Well, John, as always, thanks for taking your time and coming on the program.
Bob, thanks for having me. Great to talk to you. Be well.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. I'll tell you one thing that I've learned through this process with a senior this year is that it's interesting how he's got certain expectations, and I'm making certain assumptions, he's making certain assumptions, and we're not sharing those assumptions together. And so he's got certain expectations that are different than what my expectations are. And for instance, we're debating on, and I posted this on the blog today to get, and I'd love your input if you want to go to the website and give it to me, whether or not he brings a car to school. I don't think it's a good idea, but he wants to take his car. If we would have set those expectations back as a freshman, we wouldn't be having these discussions today. It's just really interesting when you think about it, and there's all kinds of things that, and of course, if you have a child in college, this is old hat for you, but like I said, this is a new experience for me, so I always appreciate John and having him on the program. He has got such great information, and his heart is definitely in helping people. MyCollegeCorner.com is his website. This is Bob Brooks. You got a question for me, go to the website, www.prudentmoney.com. We are all out of time. Until we do meet again next time, keep the faith and have a great rest of the day.
That's all the time we have for today. Questions or comments for Bob, or to find out more great information like what you've just heard, visit www.prudentmoney.com. Be sure to join Bob Brooks again for the next edition of Prudent Money.
Well, a Christ-centered education that comes to you. This is Bob Brooks, host of the Prudent Money Radio Show, and I want to tell you about Abilene Christian University's online degree programs. Further your education at a nationally recognized Christian university without the need to relocate, while all balancing the demands of work, life, and your community. Abilene Christian University Online offers online bachelor's, master's, doctoral, and certificate programs that help you advance your career and pursue your your passion. The accredited online programs are structured in 7-week terms so you can complete your degree in a reasonable amount of time. As a student, you're part of a vibrant, virtual, Christ-centered community. ACU offers a variety of financial assistance programs to qualifying students, including scholarships. Abilene Christian University is redefining Christian higher education. Learn more about the online degree programs at acu.edu/online.
Prudent Money with Bob Brooks is sponsored by the Prudent Money Foundation on 91.3.